right, my friends, welcome back to Anti-War Radio. I'm your host, Scott Horton. And, well, all that preceding audio I just played for you was Ron Paul's weekly update at 888-322-1414. And then we heard him on Fox News versus some hairdo. And then his interview with, I forget the name of the guy, where he was explaining the book Dying to Win by Robert A. Pape, a very important book, one on his reading summer reading list for Rudy Giuliani. And I was very happy this morning to see this article up on LouRockwell.com. It's the Ron Paul Revolution Halftime Report by James Ostrowski. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Scott.
Well, usually we try to focus on in-depth foreign policy matters and this and that, but I've been trying to spend as much time as possible on the developments in the Ron Paul campaign, as I know all of you guys over at LouRockwell.com are doing.
Yep.
And I have to admit, I'm one of those that you identify in your article today. I didn't email you about it, but I did think, oh, come on, give me a break. When you wrote, what, a month or so ago, 2 months ago maybe, that, hey, Ron Paul really does have a chance at this. He really could not only win the nomination, but he could actually win the presidency. And I have to admit that a couple more articles you've written since then, a few blog entries here and there, you're getting my hopes up, Jim. Tell me, first of all, how it is that you conjure he could get the Republican nomination, and then we can move on into his strategy for victory against a Democrat in November 08, too.
Yeah, well, first of all, let me just say that, you know, I've been analyzing political campaigns for 30 years. I'm a son of a judge in Buffalo, grew, and he had to run for office. He was not appointed. So I've been involved in politics my whole life. So I'm kind of like Murray Rothbard. I kind of look at the game of politics and try to play it, and try to figure out who's going to win or lose.
Mm-hmm.
Unrelated totally to my own personal preferences, I predicted that John Kerry would be the Democratic nominee in December of 2003. Just looked at the facts and figured it out, and that was my prediction, and turned out to be true. So that's how I'm kind of approaching this. But the first thing I looked at was how bad the other candidates are. McCain, Romney, and Giuliani, the big three at this point, they all have huge flaws that I think would prevent them from really, you know, locking up the nomination early. The other factor I looked at was that all the candidates are for the war except Ron Paul. Now, it may be that most Republicans are for the war, but that doesn't mean they're all going to vote against Ron Paul. I mean, that would assume that they're all single-issue voters. I think Ron will get some of the Republicans who support the war simply because they might agree with him on numerous other issues. But with so many candidates in the race, and the only he's the only anti-war candidate, you got to take it real seriously. And then, you know, there are numerous other factors. I figured that I've seen him speak three times. I'm quite familiar with his speaking style. And I was a little worried that he wouldn't have enough time to answer because he's the substance candidate and the other people are soundbite people. But he's even shown that he's becoming the master of the soundbite.
Right.
So he's just destroyed these people in the debates when he had a chance to speak, obviously. In the first and third debates were kind of crappy debates. But in the second debate, where he actually had some time, it was, you know, it was like Muhammad Ali out there. The guy's just a great debater. I mean, I've seen him on the floor of the House many times. You know he can give a great speech, but now he's proven that he can get out there in live national TV, and there's a lot of pressure there, even for somebody who's a veteran like he is. He's a great debater. And then when you put together the issue, I looked at the issue coalitions that he can put together. I really think that one of the sleeper issues is the Federal Reserve, inflation. I remember there was one debate where he's the only person that mentioned the word inflation in the whole debate. There's a lot of people out there who follow this hard money issue. You know, maybe 5% of the population. That's a big coalition to get on your side if you're trying to win a nomination. So it's not just the anti-war, abolish the IRS. He's got the drug war. He's the only candidate as opposed to the drug war. That's maybe 5 to 10% of the population who follows that issue. He could put together a lot of single issue coalitions and be, you know, quite a force. And so I just started looking at these factors, none of which have anything to do with my personal preference. And I said, you know, I think this could happen. I've been very guarded in my language. I haven't flat out made, you know, predictions as an analyst, maybe as a cheerleader. I've given a speech on Thursday in Buffalo. Maybe I'll do that as a cheerleader. But as an analyst, all I'm saying is he can win the nomination, and he can win in November, and that's my opinion. If I'm wrong, I'll have to hide out in Australia or something. But so far, my predictions, for example, the fact that he would win that he would be the internet candidate, that wasn't a real tough prediction, but my God, how that's turned out. That primary is over. He's won the internet primary. My prediction that he would do well in the debates has turned out to be true. So some of my predictions this year have already turned out to be true. So people have to look at that and evaluating whether my other predictions are going to be true.
Well, you're definitely right about his mastering of the soundbite. I read an article the other day where they talked about how he's mastered political, jiu-jitsu, but judo. You know, where you take the other guy's weight and strength and power and make him clumsily hurt himself. And then the example was Tucker Carlson said, well, that just sounds like, callous and uncaring and mean to just abandon the people of New Orleans and not have the federal government help them. And he said, well, I think it's callous and mean to turn them over to the tender mercies of the federal government. He didn't have to back up and say, well, you know, we need to help people sometimes. He just turned it right around and said, are you kidding me? Sicking the feds on these poor people after they've just been hit by a hurricane? Forget that.
Yeah, and that's a great example for all the listeners out there. I'm a trial lawyer, been in a lot of debates and so on. You can never win playing defense. You win like Patton won. You attack. And that's Ron has shown he's very adept at that, turning the tables around, taking an attack, and throwing it right back at him harder. And that's the kind of skill that, you know, as time goes on, at some point somebody's going to drop out, although it's kind of part of my analysis that it's going to be a crowded field. But when he gets more time, when he gets one-on-one, say, with if he does get the nomination, I pity the other candidate because the guy's got this encyclopedic knowledge of, he's been in and out of Congress for 35 years or so. He knows the federal government cold. He knows all the issues. He knows economics. He understands history. He studied it. And he's got this beautiful private sector experience as a physician, which checkmates the Democrats on basically their key issue, which is health care. I don't think they want to talk about immigration much. But on their key domestic issue, his ability to pull out anecdotes out of his own personal experience, which he's already showed on some of these interviews, is just fantastic. So, I support Ron Paul, but you know, as an analyst, I also believe that he's going to be a very serious candidate, and I think he's already going to be a serious candidate. Let me tell you a quick story: the debate, the Rudy Giuliani confrontation. My wife was watching it. She got all scared and nervous when Rudy went after Ron, and I said, "No, this is the best favor that anybody ever did for Ron Paul. Rudy elevated him to basically top tier status as a candidate. So, things are breaking. There's an old saying: I'd rather be lucky than good. Things are breaking his way. Even the Fred Thompson thing coming in. I've had people say, "Oh, that's going to hurt Ron Paul." I don't see how. I mean, it really doesn't take much away from Ron on his. And his strong issues. He's pro-war, and our local Buffalo columnist took him apart pretty good too, with just kind of not having any specific ideas. So everything seems to be breaking his way. And then, of course, I really think you can analyze the general without this primaries without analyzing the general election, because I really think that you can pencil Hillary in. I think she's got the nomination. She's going to have to hold up Barack Obama like a fighter in one of the old, you know, corrupt movies where the fighter's been bought off, just to make it look like there's a contest there. So, and then you look at who's going to beat Hillary. How does a pro-war Republican beat Hillary when most of the nation is against the war? The answer is they they don't, they're going to lose.
Right.
And people greatly underestimate Hillary Clinton.
Well,
she's absolutely brilliant, you know, intellectually. She's a brilliant politician. She even looks presidential, you know. We've never had a woman president, but she kind of, you can kind of see her in the Oval Office. And that's just, again, not my personal view. You know, I'm not a big fan of Hillary, but just sizing her up as a candidate, very formidable candidate in the Democratic nomination. Unless you get an anti-war Republican, I don't see how Hillary stays out of the White House. And when that sinks in, that it's either Ron or Hill, a lot of people are going to swallow hard and vote for Ron Paul, even if they don't agree with him on some of these issues.
Yeah, and you know, Hillary Clinton also has on her side that she's married to Bill, and he's legendary for, well, as you described yourself in a way, they're really good at the rubber meets the road, seeing the way the actual politics on the ground works. How are we going to line up these delegates and those, and who do we need to push poll in which state, and those kinds of things. Bill Clinton is a master at that kind of thing. And I guess that is, I don't want to just let it go without saying that Hillary will beat Obama, because she does have such high negatives in the overall population, but really in the primaries, I think you're right that she may well have Barack Obama, as much as many people find her distasteful. She may have Barack Obama on the ropes, and if we can take it for granted that she'll be the nominee, then I guess the important point for those fighting for Ron Paul here is that the rest of the Republican Party understands and that they begin thinking as far ahead as you are and realize that they only have one chance to keep the presidency. And
exactly.
And the thing is, the American people also, they want divided government. I don't think anybody wants the Democrats to control the presidency and the Congress the way the
That's
Republicans
scary.
Just finished doing.
That's scary, you know. Hillary and a Democratic Congress, you don't want that.
Yeah, so I'll tell you what, let's take a short break here and play a song, and we'll be right back. We're talking with James Ostrowski. He writes for LouRockwell.com. He's the author of Political Class Dismissed, Essays Against Politics. What a great title for a book. This is Anti-War Radio. We'll be right back after this.
Well, I've skated every ditch in Texas, Houston, El Paso. Yes, I've met some fine folks and a few assholes. Vertical is all right. Man, I've ground some curves. And I've skated every piece of ship many rounds in the suburbs. But if the pool rules, ain't no fool. From the old school, if the pool rules. Well, they call me the trespasser, and I might be in your yard. But if you're gonna catch me, you'll have to try real hard. Well, I'll skate every one there is till there ain't no more around. Drain your pool, you son of a bitch, cause I'm coming to your town. Ain't the pool rules, I ain't no fool. From the old school, ain't the pool rules.
All right, my friends, this is Anti-War Radio on Chaos Radio 95.9 FM in Austin, Texas. And I want to play for you this short clip of Ron Paul on The Daily Show.
It's summer at the Shack. Joe's Crab Shack. We got your favorites like Big King Crab.
Sorry, they're going to make us watch a commercial first. My apologies. Don't go to Joe's Crab Shack. We're talking with James Ostrowski from LouRockwell.com. Here's and we'll be right back with him. Here's Ron Paul on Jon Stewart.
For president. Please welcome to the show Congressman Ron Paul. Congressman! Nice to see you.
Thank you. It's very nice to be here.
Thank you for joining us. You have accomplished no small feat, which is you're running for president very much as an underdog, yet you've created a nice little buzz going about the Ron Paul candidacy. What do you attribute that to?
A good message, the philosophy of liberty. And people are still interested in being free people, living in a free country. And
but you're talking about America not spreading that liberty to other areas, such as Canada and other...
No. Right. And I don't believe in trying to spread it. I think it's a good message, but I don't believe in spreading it with guns.
Interesting.
We should spread it by setting a good example and get others to emulate us, but not to try to force it on other people.
Which brought up, there was an interesting question, and they're very pleased. Chris Wallace asked you at the Republican debate, why are you running as a Republican? But really, it's only your Iraq message that's somewhat different, maybe, from all of your counterparts.
Yeah, I think that's the case, but I don't think they're very good conservatives either. You know, they talk about balancing budgets and spending less, but they don't really. But you know, the Republican Party has been known to have a position where they didn't like going overseas. You know, they didn't especially agree with Clinton on going into Kosovo and in Somalia.
Right.
So they flip-flop around. But no, I've taken a very clear position that we shouldn't have gone in.
What's so interesting about Congressman Ron Paul is you appear to have consistent principled integrity. Americans don't usually go for that. You seem to practice what you preach. You seem to preach it consistently, even though people might disagree with the message. They certainly can't argue that you're a man of consistent principle.
Yeah, and I like to think that I've introduced a brand new idea into this campaign. I've even suggested that we follow the Constitution.
Now, I'm not familiar with that. That document, the Constitution.
This is the thing that we sort of swear to uphold. You know?
See, I have found that the Republicans oftentimes will campaign against big government, but it seems, at least with this administration, they were against government they didn't control. But now that they control it, they find it to be very useful. And expand the power of it as opposed to bring it down.
I think that's a temptation that most people yield to once they get into power. And I hope I am different, and I hope I never yield to that temptation. And so far, so good.
Now, you originally ran as a libertarian.
I ran in 88 as a libertarian candidate, but I've been in Congress for 10 terms in my 10th term, always as a Republican.
Now, why, if you ran, you said something interesting before backstage, if you ran as a libertarian, you wouldn't have gotten this platform.
No, you don't get in debates. You know, we're overseas spreading the message of democracy. But, you know, here, if you're in a third party, you have a tough time. You can't get on ballots. You spend all your time getting on ballots. You have to be a Ross Perot to even get on ballots.
To have some of the bucks.
But the two parties are very much in control of the system, and they exclude individuals who aren't in that mold.
What about your domestic agenda? You know, I think you've sort of made your bones on this idea about Iraq and liberty. You're a guy that really would get rid of a lot of our government.
Yeah, I think that'd be true. I think a lot of our government is very wasteful.
Right.
And
where would you go? Let's say because you won't accept as a doctor Medicare, right? Or
I never did.
Right. But you stuck to that.
Right.
Is that something you'd get rid of?
Yes, but that's not high on my agenda. Matter of fact, we've taught a couple generations to be very dependent on government.
Right.
And that's not my goal, because I think you have to have a transition period. I happen to think that the market can deliver any service better than the government can. And my goal...
Would you use that for defense, too, or no? You would say defense,
no, we have defense, but this militarism isn't defense. This is opposite of defense. So I think it would be much better for the private market to deliver all
would
the
you
services.
Would you go post office? You'd say post office.
Well, I'd legalize...
You got to give the post office.
I'd legalize...
41 cents is a good deal.
No, I'd legalize competition. I mean, what the heck? Let a private firm, that, you know, there's FedEx and a few other those companies that do exist. I'd just legalize competition in first-class mail and let the market decide which is best.
Right. So, but doesn't that, in some respects, trust corporations over, or is that... Because there's always been regulation. Are you would get rid of regulation for that as well? Or?
Yeah, and there's a big difference between corporations who benefit from government largesse. That's corporatism, and that's evil.
Right.
You know, the Halliburton stuff. And
no, I'm familiar with that.
The military-industrial
complex. No. I've heard some things.
But a Bill Gates. You've
right,
heard
exactly.
Of that? How about a Bill Gates, though? He's very wealthy because we buy his services, and I think that's okay.
Right.
I don't think we should be afraid of people who make a lot of money, even in entertainment. We shouldn't be afraid of
no, people. I agree. In entertainment, I think especially in entertainment. Now, what about, you got a debate coming up.
That's right.
Tomorrow is a big debate. Anything you're going to throw out there? Any insight into the other candidates you can share? Is there anybody you find just unbelievably distasteful?
Well, ideas. I find some of their ideas very
anybody
distasteful.
You literally say, like, don't make my podium next to that guy.
No, I haven't said that yet, but I think what I'd
think
like...
What do you think of this Romney cat? Has he talked to you?
Yeah, he said hello once.
He did?
Yeah, he did.
I don't go for him. He strikes me as the Republican John Kerry in the sense of this sort of aristocratic bearing, but playing the game of like, hey, look at me, I'm hunting, I'm drinking coffee, huh?
Yeah, but he's on top of the polls. What does that mean?
What do you think that means?
That means I have to work hard and
You've
get my
some...
supporters out there and
I'm gonna
do
help
a good
you
job.
Out. Here's what I'm going to do for you.
Okay.
Very quickly, I'm going to give you a couple of zingers
Uh-oh.
For these guys for tomorrow.
Uh-oh.
So when you're out there with, okay, here you go. Here's a good one here for, let's go with Giuliani. Hey, you love the war on terror so much, why don't you marry it? Oh, wait. You'd probably then just divorce it a couple of years later. Okay. Here's one. Hey, Tommy Thompson, what's your middle name? Tom? I'll have these for you on cards if you want them.
Okay,
I'm here to help you.
Me. Thank you. Me too. I'm here from the government, and I'm here to help you,
Thank
too.
You. Thank you so much for coming by, and continued success, and continued to bring excitement to the process, because I think that's what's lacking sometimes, and it's nice to see guys just throwing their ideas out there for whatever it is and being principled.
Thanks a lot.
It's nice to see
Appreciate
you.
It.
Thanks, Ron. Stay right there for a second. All right, you got to go.
All right, so that was Ron Paul on The Daily Show a couple of weeks ago. And so the question for you, Jim Ostrowski, is whether this approach that Ron is taking and seems to be making quite successful, going to the alternative media, using the internet and the fake news shows on Comedy Central and so forth, is he going to be able to use this more successfully than Howard Dean and Ned Lamont? They were the grassroots, the net roots candidates, and they did real well up until it came really time for the votes to be cast, and then they both lost.
Yeah, I see your point. I remember back when I was doing my analysis of Howard Dean, I saw him on Chris Matthews, and I just sized him up, and I said, this guy's not going to cut it. So, and Ned Lamont, strictly bland. There's no there. So I guess the first thing I would just say, well, Ron's just a better he's just a better candidate than them.
And well, I certainly agree with that.
I mean, they had no staying power, and I think Ron does. He just has a better message. I mean, if Dean couldn't win the Democratic nomination, when he had every advantage. It just shows you that he just didn't have what it takes, and he was sort of out front and lost it. And Ron is starting, from scratch and gaining ground. The thing with the new, what I call the new media, or everybody calls it the new media, is very few people under 40 read newspapers, and very few people under 60 watch the evening news. So the old media is becoming increasingly irrelevant. It's the internet, It's internet radio, like your show, and my show in Buffalo, doing it 1 hour a week, and these unconventional, like, you know, these fake news shows. That's where the young people are. You know, that's where the people who don't have landlines, who the pollsters can't reach, people who haven't voted before, but maybe vote, maybe will register for the first time and vote for Ron. The pollsters don't know who they are. So, it's all good.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now, there's a couple of things there. First of all, is Howard Dean, even though he completely blew it during the time in the run up to the point when he blew it, which I guess really was Iowa, he had raised a ton of money online. And do you think that that Ron Paul's online support, this, I don't think anybody can deny this wildfire that's been spreading around the internet based on his candidacy, even the Washington Post, or I forget whose headline it was. Maybe it was a British paper, obscure no more. You know, he's been catapulted to at least, you know, semi-fame.
Yeah, well,
What about the ability to turn that into dollars, to turn those people who show up at those meetups into real activists?
Yeah, I think that will happen. A lot of the people... a lot of the people supporting Ron, I think, are basically young people, working class people, who may not have, you know, they may not be able to give the $2,300, but I think you're going to get a lot of 25s and 50s and $100 donations. I think he's going to have enough money to go all the way. He may not have enough money to compete, you know, buying television ads, but I think he'll have enough money to stay in the game. His poll numbers will slowly go up. They already are slowly going up. I mean, it's very difficult to get from 0 to 3%. It's a lot easier to get from 3 to 6 because that 3 starts to attract attention, money, and media coverage. But he's already gotten from 0 to 3 in New Hampshire and even in some national polls, and that's the tough thing. I think he's going to creep up, it's going to be you know, synergistic relationship. The polls are going to go up. He's going to get more money. He's going to be able to buy TV time. He'll get more media attention. And so all these things should come together. And I don't think he'll ever need as much as, say, Giuliani or Hillary, because he does have the web as a base, and people are turning away from the mainstream media. But I think he'll have enough money to play in the game, mm-hmm. really to the end of the nomination process, which, as I said in the article, we're going to know who the nominee is in the late winter, early spring.
Right. And he's already said, too, that his campaign will be wasting a lot less money than Giuliani or Hillary Clinton or John McCain or any of the rest of these who all hire legions of people and just blow money everywhere on the nicest hotels and all this kind of stuff, where he has no need for such things at all.
Yeah, there's this whole nest of consultants who, you know, they sit around and wait for this opportunity, and then they gouge the candidates with all sorts of promises. And some of them have good track records, and some of them don't. But Ron is a frugal guy, and he's saving his money. They're using Meetup a lot. They're using web resources. I mean, I'm putting a rally for Ron together on Thursday in front of City Hall in Buffalo at noon, and just doing it myself. It's like spontaneous order. And a lot of people are doing that around the country. They're just through Meetup and these other websites.
Yeah, in fact,
having their own activities.
I think that's great. You use the phrase spontaneous order. That kind of describes this whole campaign, which just proves Ron's point that, you know, when people are left free to achieve the ends they seek, they'll do it. You don't need to force them. And yep. look at speaking of spontaneous order, there's a rally in Buffalo. Yeah.
And it's very, you know, it's very important if anybody from the Ron Paul campaign hears this. It's very important, you know, not to run roughshod over the locals. I mean, we in Buffalo or wherever the Ron Paul people are, Montana or wherever, you know your community the best. Like, I'm having this event in front of the City Hall, the Grover Cleveland statue. He has that. He has a portrait of Grover Cleveland on his office in Washington. It's a place where there's a lot of street traffic. It's on a day when there's the market downtown. There's going to be extra people downtown. So work with the local people. I know you need a national staff, but don't run roughshod. I've seen it happen with campaigns. They just completely ignore the local people. And I'm sure Ron's people won't do that, but I just want to emphasize that, to work with the local people, and then don't go in and just kick everybody out once maybe you hire a staffer or two. Just have a decentralized campaign along with the message of political decentralization.
Do you think that all the grassroots and net roots and everything that are building up around this campaign, we discussed whether they can really raise money and how important that may or may not be in the end. But what about turning out to vote? Are they? I know in many states you have to already be registered as a Republican long before primary day. Here in Texas, you can just walk into the voting booth and say, I'm voting Republican this time, and vote in all the Republican primaries. But I especially wonder about, as you said, people who normally don't take part in the process at all, who are coming out of the woodwork. Are they actually going to turn out to vote? And the leftists, the liberals who are saying that they really like Ron Paul and, you know, nuts to Hillary and Barack, are they going to actually, you know, gulp and go vote Republican, register and vote Republican in the primaries? It seems to me like, well, I don't know. I guess I'm just trying to find reasons to be pessimistic or something, and I shouldn't do that. But I wonder whether all this support is going to translate, one, into dollars, and two, into actual votes.
Well, it's a good question. Up in New York, not a lot of people vote in the Republican primary, so it's very important that at these different meetup groups that be number one on the agenda. People have to register Republican by the general election of this year in order to be eligible to vote next year. They make it really difficult for us up here. But that's just going to have to be on the agenda for all these meetup groups. I know they want to have one ultimately in like every zip code or every neighborhood, and that's what they're going to have to do, get the vote out in these early primaries.
Mm-hmm. And now something that's really important too, and we touched on this earlier, is the Republican Party, the professionals who run the offices and that kind of thing, the campaign chairman from around the country, the party leaders and those kinds of people, they have to realize soon that Ron is the only one who can beat Hillary. And they have to get on board. It can't be Ron versus the world forever. At some point, the Republican Party and he have got to shake hands and make up and work together on this.
Yeah, and they're going to be dragged kicking and screaming to do that. But I know up in New York, the Republican establishment is supporting Rudy. He came into Buffalo and grabbed a lot of rich people's money up here. And I know all the cast of characters. There's these people who want to just real quick. The scam is that they don't care too much about what's going on down in Washington, but the president appoints the prosecutors and the judges, and so for this Buffalo political machine, they always have to control the command post, the legal command post of society, to paraphrase Murray Rothbard.
Uh-huh.
The judges and the prosecutors. So that's what happens. Rudy comes in, leaves with about $350,000, and then when there's a vacancy for judge, they go back to the guy who held the party and say, "Hey, who do you like?" And that guy ends up in a judgeship, and it's really nice to control the judiciary and the prosecutors, you know, because it's like a get out of jail free card.
Yeah, that must be really nice.
I talk about that in my book, by the way. There's an extensive critique of the American legal system along those lines. But the Republicans up here are settling on Rudy, and I imagine that if Rudy falters, they'll try to, you know, go with Fred Thompson or somebody else. But at some point, if Ron is winning a lot of the delegates and looks like he's going to get it, they're going to have to go to the table and cut a deal and maybe try to get their man in as VP. You know, somebody who's acceptable to us and them, obviously acceptable to Ron Paul, but, you know, somebody who's acceptable to his libertarian base. There's people out there. Actually, there's some good people in South Carolina, but geographically that doesn't work. But, I think that'll eventually happen.
Let me ask you about this. New Hampshire is really far away from here. And as far as I know, if you live in Buffalo, it might as well be Texas to you. But tell us about New Hampshire. Obviously, it is the most important primary. It says in their state law that no matter who moves their primary to what date, they'll always be first. They're the all-important primary. It's the one that Pat Buchanan beat George Bush in, 1992 or what have you. And the state flag says live free or die and so forth like that. Is it possible that Ron Paul could win or come in first or second or third place or make a real strong showing in New Hampshire, you think?
I believe he will. I'm very confident of that. And that's critical to my analysis as well, that New Hampshire is the most libertarian state in the Northeast for the reasons that you say. There's a movement, the Free State Project, to get libertarians to move to New Hampshire, and a lot of them have actually already moved there ahead of what they've committed to do. Economically, they have one of the freest economies, and you don't have to have a car insurance up there. It's a right to bear arms state. So there's a natural constituency. I don't think that the New England Republicans are really into the pro-war thing. You don't have a lot of evangelical Christians up there anymore. And so it's a natural, it's a gift to Ron Paul. I couldn't think of a better state to start off the primary. And if he gets 20% up there, he might win. Because the other thing I said is that there's going to be 11 candidates shortly, and none of them are going to drop out, because who's going to drop out in 6 months? And maybe one of them. I think Gilmore is out of money already, or one of those people. And you're going to have a very crowded field, so a small percentage could win you the primary. And then even when it comes to the delegates, a lot of these states have winner-take-all, either statewide or in the congressional districts. So even with a small percentage win, he could win the majority of the delegates. So some of these rules are designed to maintain the establishment's lock on power, but ironically this year they may help the insurgent.
Mm-hmm. And he's a hell of a lot better candidate than Pat Buchanan ever was, too.
I definitely think he is, but then some of that constituency will also go with Ron Paul. I mean, Ron, Buchanan sounded quite libertarian in those days when he was running for president, and so I think some of the vote that went for Pat Buchanan will also go for Ron Paul.
Okay, and now it may be impossible in 4 minutes or something, but obviously you're extremely well-schooled in all of libertarianism and so forth. Please explain why Ron Paul's libertarian approach to health care is superior to Hillary Clinton's Hillary care.
Wow, that's a tough question.
And what the hell, we don't have a hard break. We can go over if you want to.
No, well, you know, what's happened in health care is that over a long period of time, there's been a small incremental growth in government's role in healthcare. And each time the government starts to regulate something, something goes wrong with that, and so there's calls for further regulation. We're now in this sort of semi-socialist system, and we can either, Ludwig von Mises said, that the mixed economy is inherently unstable and is usually tending towards full socialism. So the choice that we have is to either go forward with a full socialistic, medical system, which is an obvious failure. I mean, they tried it in the Soviet Union, or we can go back to a truly free market. I think Ron's challenge is going to be with all these things. When you propose a libertarian solution to a skeptical person, they always kind of, they just kind of superimpose it on the status quo. And what they don't understand is the status quo was created by, government intervention in the first place. So it's kind of a challenge to our communication skills to just talk about, what it would be like in a free market. And Ron's very well positioned to do that. He understands that, like in the 1950s, you'd go to the hospital, have a baby, and you'd walk out with a bill of $250. And this is before Medicare. And he understands the economics of it, too, that basically what Medicaid and Medicare have done, ironically, is raise the cost of medical care because of the law of supply and demand. They're throwing additional bucks at medical services. It's kind of like college college student loans and subsidies. The result is that when the government throws money at something, the price goes up, and therefore you're just kind of running in place and not accomplishing anything. Just real quick, my father happened to be in the emergency room last year, and he turned out to be fine. But he was stuck in there for about more than 24 hours, and nobody ever told us what was wrong with him. We, you know, they kept us in the dark, and I just started analyzing it. There wasn't anything else to do sitting in the hospital. I said, like, this is what happens when there's no connection between payment and service. Nobody even cares to inform you of what's going on. And so because of this, disconnect between payment and service that, Medicare and Medicaid have foisted upon us, it's degraded the quality of medical care. And you know, Ron's very good at this. He said, why can't a nurse give you a general physical? People have to understand that in a free market, medical care would be a lot cheaper, a lot more quickly available with less paperwork and more competition. And we just have to get the point across that the true free market is the best friend of the poor throughout history and in every country. And I think Ron is very, because of his 40, 50 years experience in the healthcare field, is just perfectly positioned to get that message across.
Most times that the government, particularly on the left, give up. Okay, we surrender. We'll go ahead and socialize this for you. We'll go ahead and subsidize that or regulate that. That it seems to me it's really often a ruse for welfare for rich people, like Section 8 housing. Section 8 housing is really about welfare for the contractor, not so much for the people who are going to end up living in the Section 8 housing. And
sure.
So I wonder whether you see an angle like that in medical care where, not knowing the details, this whole Hillary care and nationalizing single payer, whatever they call it, all sounds to me like it's probably just a trick of the pharmaceutical companies whereby they'll be able to set the price through their lobbyists' meetings with their congressmen, which is now against the law, right, for them to set their price. But as long as they invite their congressmen along, they can set it wherever they want.
Well, I totally agree with that. Let me tell you a little anecdote. Paul Tokash was the majority leader of the New York State Assembly until he left office. And, in the debate over Medicare, which is Medicaid, which local our local communities pay a lot of it here, and it's causing huge property tax increases. He said, now don't attack Medicaid because, almost all of Medicaid goes to the poor and the disabled and the elderly and so on. And I started thinking to myself, well, actually, almost all of Medicaid goes to fairly rich people, doctors, hospitals, medical supply corporations, and so on. So you always have to look beyond the rhetoric and find out that a lot of these programs that supposedly to benefit the poor actually benefit some of the wealthiest people in society. I can tell you, in the we've been trying to start a tax revolt here in the last couple of years, and we have no physicians whatsoever. And it's like, what's the matter? Don't you want lower taxes? I think people sort of implicitly understand, in today's economy, if you're a physician, you're kind of a recipient of a lot of largesse from the government. So again, we have to get that populist message out there. We have to look behind the rhetoric and explain the real economics of it, which is that the current healthcare system does not particularly benefit the poor, but it benefits a lot of wealthy special interests.
Yep. And ultimately, if there is a real chance for Ron Paul to get this nomination or even become the president, it's going to be because he represents the original American values, minus the owning slaves. He represents the English Enlightenment. He is, as you call him in your article today on LouRockwell.com, a Jeffersonian. And
yeah,
we haven't had a Jeffersonian president in a long time, but this is still
Cleveland
America.
Since Grover Cleveland in 1897. And the reason I use an earthquake metaphor is not just blowing smoke, but it really is an earthquake because a lot of There's a lot of pent-up energy there. A lot of these Hamiltonian big government programs have been going awry for so long that people are just fed up with them and are ready to push that button and just say, you know, let's get rid of this. Let's get rid of that. Reform it? No, just get rid of it. We've tried to reform it 17 times. Let's just scrap it. So when Ron's out there talking about elimination of wholesale government agencies, nobody's really raising an eyebrow. They're just saying, yeah, let's do it. People sort of implicitly understand, like you say, HUD. HUD was always a scam for wealthy contractors, right from the New Deal. And, the work we've done, the libertarian movement, for the last 30 or 40 years, getting this message out there, it's beginning to pay off. A lot of capital has been invested in human capital and getting the message out there. And so you see, when Ron talks, people are now saying, yeah, I agree with that. Probably because they've heard it 10, 20 times before from some libertarian magazine or radio show or think tank.
James Ostrowski writes for LouRockwell.com. You can find him on the blog there and in his archives. If you look on the left side there and click on columnists, you can find his entire archives. And also he's got an article today on LouRockwell.com, Ron Paul Revolution Halftime Report. He's an attorney from Buffalo and author of the book Political Class Dismissed, Essays Against Politics. Thanks very much for your time today.
Thanks a lot, Scott. It was a lot of fun.
Appreciate it. All right, guys, this is Anti-War Radio on Chaos Radio, 95.9 FM in Austin, Texas.
Folks, my guest tonight is a Republican presidential candidate here to get the Colbert bump. With my help, he could become the Republican Mike Gravel. Please welcome Ron Paul. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Good to be with you.
Now, I usually like to come over to my guests with a head full of steam, either on their side or against them. Mm-hmm. All right? I'm not sure how to feel about you, but I'm passionately ambivalent.
That is good. That is good.
Because let me stake out some of the things you've been here. You voted against the Patriot Act.
I did.
You voted against the Iraq War.
Yeah.
But you also hate taxes and you hate gun control. You are an enigma wrapped in a riddle, nestled in a sesame seed bun of mystery.
Wow.
Are you a Republican or are you not a Republican?
Now, you're confused because I'm a constitutionalist and you haven't met one in a long time. And it's not that unusual to put those together if you believe in the rule of law and believe in the American tradition and believe in limited government.
But hasn't our Attorney General said the Constitution is quaint?
That is what they said, but he's wrong. He's wrong, and we need to prove himself.
What do you mean by a constitutionalist? Because the Constitution is not a suicide pact, sir.
That is true.
Okay, obeying the Constitution doesn't mean that, you know, we can let anything happen that will harm our country.
No, if you obey the Constitution, though, you'll be a freer person than if you disobey it. If you allow the president to run wild and, you know, investigate and spy on people and start wars that aren't declared, you could lose your liberty. So I would think it'd be a good idea.
All the president's doing and all the president has ever done is what's best for us. He is doing domestic spying, uh-huh. And he invaded Iraq. And whether or not that was a declared war or whether or not he had subpoenas for the domestic spying, you know, I'd rather be alive than free and dead.
You know.
How about you?
That's what they say.
Deadline, huh?
But they're wrong about that. I'd rather be free and alive, and you can be. You do not have to give up your liberties.
You said in a recent speech, it is dissent from government policies that defines the true patriot and the champion of liberty. It is that kind of talk that lost the Republicans the last election.
And they deserved it.
But you're a Republican.
Yes,
you're out of power now.
But they did not follow that dictum. And they didn't follow the Constitution. They went to war.
Because they ran away from the president. They dissented with him, and they no longer had a unified shield to keep out the Mongol hordes of the Democrats.
I don't think so. They didn't run away from the president, and they lost. I ran away from the president, and I won. I didn't support the war. I didn't support the Patriot Act.
Now, let's go back to this war thing. You
yeah.
say that the government abuses the word war, that we have, that it enhances, they say, you said the government loves to use the word war because it enhances the power of the government and stifles dissent. That's why we have wars on drugs, poverty, illiteracy, and terrorism all going on at the same time.
Right.
Do you think it's right to criticize the government, you know, well, of fear-mongering
when
we're at war?
I think so. It's very important. That's especially when you should criticize the government when they go to war incorrectly. You know, Randolph Bourne, a famous writer many years ago, said, war is the health of the state. And if you believe in liberty, you want to reduce the size and the scope of the state. So therefore, you want to stamp out all wars and prevent wars from stopping, whether it's a war on drugs or a war in Iraq and war against poverty. All these wars are just to scare the people in order to give up their liberties and give up their money to the government so that they can solve all our problems.
What do you think the government should be doing? I mean, I'm a small government guy, unless, of course, the president wants to do something. Now, what do you think the government should be doing? I'm going to ask you something. I'm going to just ask a question to any of the presidential candidates here. I want to ask you to raise your hand if you'd like to abolish the Department of Education.
Sure.
Okay. Keep
sure.
it. Keep it up. Keep
oh,
it up.
Okay.
Keep it up, and put it down when I name an agency you would like to keep. Okay. Department of Homeland Security, Department of Energy, the IRS, FEMA, the UN, NATO, the Interstate Commerce Commission, NAFTA,
hey.
The WTO.
Yeah. Get rid of them all.
UNICEF.
That would be my very last. We don't need it. We could do better in charity work, but it wouldn't be one of my targets. I come down here.
You come down here where the children are?
Yeah, about there.
Well,
attack that.
Sir, thank you so much for joining us today. Good luck with
you.
Your candidacy. I hope you get the Colbert bump. Look for it in the next polls.
I'm prepared.
Presidential candidate Ron Paul.